With a title like Show the Value of What You Do, I knew the book might be of interest to IT services and MSPs. So let's talk to Jack and Patty Phillips, the authors, on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Well, the first question I always start out with is, tell me a little bit about your journey to get here. It's always useful to know how somebody gets to where they are. How did you get to where you are now?
I came out of technology. My first degree was electrical engineering from Georgia Tech. And I flipped over into a learning department at Lockheed Martin. And I had a request to show the value of a project I was working on. The value that this person wanted, it was a chief engineer. He wanted to see the actual ROI. So we're investing money. Show me what value that it delivers to Lockheed. And I'd never had that request before. I worked on that. I was working on a master's degree in statistics at the time. And so I used all my resources to come to a good conclusion to his request, that it became a system, a process that we just kept refining and making it better. We wrote a book on it in 1983. We turned that into this company 10 years later. So we've been operating now for about 30 years. And we work in 70 countries. We've written now about 100 books that support this. Our books are in 38 languages. So it's grown quite well over a period of time. And we just put our capstone book, I guess, together, a simplified approach to what we're doing here as a way of thinking. And it's called Show the Value of What You Do. We'll talk about that more later. But that's kind of the summary of where we've been. We both have experience in the business world. Patty, why don't you add to that?
I got my real job out of college. I work for a large electric utility, and through that experience, of course, learned the business of the business, the electric utility. But one of the departments, the last department that I worked in, was market planning research. And so my team was made up of economists, planners, researchers. We did the customer research. We developed electric utility rates. So cost-benefit analysis, research methodology is part of what we did every day. And I remember when I finished up my graduate degree, one of the projects that I worked on was a project to demonstrate the impact of junior achievement, if you can imagine. I don't know if you remember junior achievement. But I love the work and I love the type of projects. When I left the power company, a mutual friend introduced Jack and me, and I really just loved the work that he was doing in corporations to help them demonstrate the value of these investments that companies were making in their people, yet they were investments for which there was no evidence at all that anything was delivering value. I did not come from HR. I did not come from talent development. I came from a different part of the business. And so when we would get involved in these programs, for example, with talent development, or HR was more policy than a business partner, the question was always, what value is this really bringing to us? And in many cases, my team would agree, not much. So when I met Jack through this mutual friend and I saw the work that he was doing, I just fell in love with it because I thought it's so clear, so easy. It's cost-benefit analysis. It's an area of work that I already had experience with and that I really appreciated. But more than that, as a participant or leader in the business that often felt like investments were wasted effort, I really valued this idea that you could demonstrate the impact and the actual return on investment of these different initiatives that we often don't think they're there and they're important, but there's just, again, no evidence that value is being added. So that's how I came at it.
Well, the title of the book is Show the Value of What You Do. And this is an area that I'm interested in, particularly because in IT service delivery, we often talk about showing business value for the investment in technology. And so but of course, we make that statement that you need to do that. And then there's not enough conversation about how you do that. Now, it seems like the first logical place is, so how do you define return on investment and its measurement?
Yeah, pretty much the classic approach. We use the fund, you know, there's many metrics that describe, you know, return on investment. Of course, there's internal rate of return, return on equity, return on assets, but we use the most fundamental, and that is the benefit cost ratio, which is the output of cost benefit analysis and ROI, return on investment reported as a percentage. So we're comparing the monetary benefits of the investments being made to the investment themselves. So Jack, you were about to jump in.
Yeah, it's just classic benefits minus costs divided by cost times 100. That's a classic way of showing the ROI. So it fits right in with the finance and accounting literature. The BCR, the benefit cost ratio that Patty mentioned, comes out of the governments. And we tracked that back 10 centuries ago. So that's the ultimate accountability. We call that level 5 when we reach that. If you can imagine a technology investment and implementation, we start with reaction. How do the people who are going to use it are reacting to this? If you don't have the right reaction, it's dead. And then what do they've learned to make it successful? Without that, they'll be hit and miss for a long time here. And third is actually applying it, application, using it properly. And then fourth is the impact it has, which is usually productivity, time saving, cost savings, quality savings, those kind of things. So the fifth level, the ultimate level, is that ROI sitting on top. And that's basically saying, was it worth it? Was it worth this investment? So that's our process.
Okay. So, but there's a lot in there, right? And so particularly for somebody who is still feels like they may be struggling a little bit, how do you guide them to get started with this process? They know kind of instinctually, hey, if we invest here, we'll get some value. But what do they need to start capturing in order to be able to do those calculations well?
Patty, I'll start with that. What we've laid out is a 6-step process here. That your project that you're implementing, you've got to start with why. And why is a business need? What is that business value? And it must connect to that. Second, make sure that your solution is the right solution. Sometimes that's obvious. Sometimes it's given, but sometimes it misses it, that this is a way to improve that impact that you want. And then we expect success so that all of the people involved in the implementation clearly see where we're going with it. Success is not there until we have that impact. That here we're designing basically the implementation to deliver the impact that we want. We're all working as a team to make sure we get to that ultimate level of accountability, the impact. Then we collect data along the way to see how well it's working around reaction, learning, application, and impact. And then we analyze the data to show how it's working all the way, including that calculation of ROI. But then we leverage it for results. We leverage it to improve the system that we have, the implementation we have, if it needs to be. We leverage it to improve future investments in this kind of process. We leverage it for support. So that's using the results in good ways to help the people involved. So that's 6 process steps that we go through, driving the 5 levels of success: reaction, learning, application, impact, ROI. Patty, I think I took up all the time on that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So what can you add to that?
Well, and just to add to it, it begins with, you know, what are the business measures that need to improve? So we take those different steps, those different types of data that Jack mentioned, and you're really kind of flipping it and beginning with what is the opportunity for the organization to make money, save money, avoid cost, and do greater good while making money, saving money, and avoiding cost, and what are the specific measures that tell us how we're performing in that area and what needs to happen. So, for example, you want to increase sales. Okay, how much? What kind of sales? Sales to whom? Is it sales to new customers? Sales to existing customers? And by how much? It might be employee turnover. Turnover of whom? Is it the front line? Is it, you know, middle management? Who is it? It could be quality. So we look at measures of output, quality, cost, time, customer satisfaction, job satisfaction, work habits, innovation. So what are opportunities? What are the specific measures that need to improve that tell us if we improve them, we're moving toward that opportunity? And is that opportunity worth pursuing in the first place? And then from there, we sort out, well, what's happening or not happening that if we change it can help us improve those measures, identify the solutions that can work, and then sort out what do people need to know to make the solution work and how can we roll it out so that people buy into it They learn what they need to know, do what we want them to do to improve the business measures. So to begin with, it's all sorting out those business measures. What is our opportunity or problem? And what are the measures that are telling us we have an opportunity or a problem? And is it worth pursuing? Are these measures, or is the improvement in these measures really worth pursuing? What is the value of that improvement? And then we work from there.
So Patty, you throw out a lot of different kind of ideas for metrics. Is there kind of a magic number of them? Like, because you can't manage 100 metrics, and you probably don't want to manage to just one. You know, how do you pick that number, and how do you identify which are the key ones that you want to focus on?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because there are thousands of metrics, and more is not better. More is more. So it's really looking at what are the measures that matter most. What are the measures that tell you one, the direction you need to go, and the direction you are going. So Jack talked about this chain of impact or this process. There are five categories of data that we work with. There's the measures that tell us what we want people to think about a product, or what we want them to think about a process, and then defining that in very simple terms. And that could be something as simple as, you know, people are telling us it's relevant to their job. People are telling us it's relevant to their organization. Sometimes we even use Net Promoter Score. From a learning perspective, it could be simple, something as simple as people telling us they have the knowledge they need to do what we want them to do. So what are the measures that tell you people get it to the extent that they need to know something? The same with behavior change and application. It depends on what are the objectives. What are you trying to get to? Your impact measures, typically at that impact level, an organization focuses on five strategic pillars, for example. So it's the key performance indicators within each pillar that we're targeting. So it's different for different organizations, of course. And again, more is more. More is not better. We begin with, where is the organization? What are those five strategic pillars? Or what are the three strategic pillars? And then we pull from there and then back into it. Does that make sense? Was that a good enough non-answer for you? Because it really does just depend, but it's a great point. You don't want a lot of measures. You want measures that matter.
Right. So, Jack, I'm going to ask you that, like, there sounds like there's a lot. I mean, this sounds like a lot of process, right? And now in my space, we all embrace process because it's very good for technical change. But at the same time, there's a balance there, because the smaller the organization, oftentimes the less able they are to take too much process. So talk to me a little bit about sort of how you scale up, or in particular scale down, you know, for different size organizations with the methodology.
Yes. See, for a small organization, the key thing is to think ROI. Think this process as they implement any new system. You know, think about how people react. What do they have to know to make it work? What will they have to do to be successful? And what impact it's going to have in my organization, and is it worth it? If we can get that thinking in, that helps us in a big way, because it avoids a lot of missteps and mistakes along the way. For a larger organization, obviously we put more structure around it. We've got huge implementations where the implementation's in millions of dollars. And so you just got to make sure that things are working and it all delivers the right outcome, and it does it with a positive ROIs. So you put more structure around it and more systems around it. We have standards that we use to guide our success. I mean, I should say guide the process. The standards are built with credibility and conservative approaches in mind. They're really CEO and CFO friendly. The rules along the road, I should say, is what we call them sometimes. You need that, particularly when you've got a large project that you're evaluating. So we adjust the detail and the in-depthness with the organization. Of a small organization, we just want them to think this way and do some informal checks, if nothing else, to make sure things are working properly. Larger organizations, we want more analysis.
So when you all were writing the book, what's sort of the model, the use case, and the persona of the reader that you were envisioning would be the most beneficial of taking that all in?
Yeah, it's team leaders are typically a team lead for an organization. so they can see what work that they're doing. Project managers, consultants, even coaches in the non-tech area. It's people who need to see the value of what they do. So even an individual contributor just working by himself or herself sometimes need to think this way and even show some data around that. But most of it's going to be a project team that we're involved in. And of course, the bigger organization, the more involved, the larger those teams are. So I'd say the project manager and the team leader are the two primary targets that we're after in this book.
Okay.
That's what they do. But it's also people who want to create value for their customers, for example. So let's say you are someone that works with a customer to help implement Salesforce. For example, one of the best services you can give your customer before, you know, ever going down that path is getting clarity on what are they trying to achieve? What is the opportunity or the problem they're trying to solve? And you position that implementation strategy around their problem. So it's about it's people who need to demonstrate the value of what they're doing. It's people who want to help others create value in what they're doing. Because again, as Jack said, it's a way of thinking. It's a process for sure. But it's also a way of thinking. Now, how can we demonstrate what we do and what we deliver, but also how can we help that customer create and generate value from the services we're providing? Because we all know that if that customer is getting value from the services we're providing, then that customer stays with us. But more than that, that customer tells someone else. And so a way to generate that value for the customer is to use this process and work with them to help them demonstrate the value of what they're investing in to those people who are asking for that demonstration of value.
So what's the biggest mistake consultants and advisors make when communicating with their customers around this space and showing the value? What do they get wrong most of the time?
Patty, you go first. I'll go second on that one. Why don't you?
Well, I think if I'm hearing the question right, the biggest mistake that consultants do is trying to be the solution for all things and not going into it asking the right questions up front and getting clarity on what is the customer really trying to do. Now, on the customer side, where the mistake is chasing every shiny object out there. And that's the other thing we have to think through. But I think it's really about us just really thinking through what are we doing, how are we doing it, why are we doing it that way? And then moving toward implementation so we can address the why. So Jack?
I'd say starting with the end in mind, and the end is a business measure, making sure we have that. That couples with what Patty says, making sure we have the right solution to get there. They miss those first two sometimes. And of course, I'd put number three is not, as Patty mentioned, not designing the whole implementation to achieve that end goal of that business measure that we have.
Gotcha. Well, if people are interested in diving in and getting started, what's the best way to get started with all this?
We can read this book. It's showing the value of what you do. It's an easy read. It's only 150 pages, and it has a lot of stories. There's 20 stories in there of individuals who have used this to make a difference. For example, one person there is a person that created a super user network to help with the implementation of large-scale systems, recognizing that so many of them break down and you need an external person to support the implementation. And those are labeled super users, as you probably know. And she built that network. And so she's using this system, this particular process to show the value of having a super user tied to your implementation. So we have lots of stories of individuals there. So it's not too complicated with formulas and math. It's just a lot of stories, easy to read. So that book gets you where you want to go, I think.
And is our website to get all the information that people can go to?
Yes, there is. Our website is roiinstitute.net. And of course, anyone can reach out to Jack or me directly, jack@roiinstitute.net and patty@roiinstitute.net.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.